Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home. This is my chair. That is my fireplace. That is my dog. He is becoming one of America's more famous animals. Not even just famous dog. I mean, he's up there. I don't know. Otto may be this generation's Lassie or Rin Tin Tin. I think I've exhausted my knowledge of famous dogs just doing that. Anyway, this is the Fireside Chat, completely unrehearsed except for one thing. I will read to you that before we begin, I'm honored to tell you that today's episode of the Fireside Chat is sponsored by Colorado Christian University. CCU Online has partnered with PragerU to offer adults the opportunity to pursue an accredited degree taught with conservative values. CCU Online offers more than 80 academic programs designed specifically for adult learners. Most classes at CCU Online are only 5 weeks long, so you can take one class at a time and still have time for the rest of life's adventures. All courses incorporate a Christian-centered worldview that has been a cornerstone of the university for more than a century. So, whether you need to finish your bachelor's degree or start your master's or doctorate degree, you should consider attending CCU Online. Go to PragerU.com/CCU and fill out the form to receive more information. No obligation, of course, on the school. You'll get connected with an enrollment counselor who can help put together a degree plan that fits your schedule. Okay. Well, hi, everybody. I want to talk to you about this for one moment. Have you heard of the concept of disinformation? Disinformation is the opposite of information. It's incorrect information. We bathe in it. It's a big problem. How much false information people get because people have an agenda that is greater than truth. Because everybody who has an agenda, not everybody, obviously, some people put truth first, but people have the belief that their agenda is so noble that they don't have to tell the truth. I'll give you a good example that has nothing to do with politics. Many years ago, well, I don't know many, maybe 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, one of the cancer societies, I don't remember which, it doesn't matter, made an announcement that the following percentage of women will get breast cancer. And it was a very high percentage. And therefore, every woman should get a mammogram. Now, it sounds noble, correct? Urging women to get mammograms, to have their breasts checked for possible growth of cancerous cells, is a very beautiful thing. However, they lied. They told a false number of the percentage of women who will get breast cancer. What was their rationale? Their rationale was, hey, what's the difference? What's more important, not getting breast cancer or us telling the truth about how many women will get breast cancer? And that's how they rationalize it. The same thing with the, which I had been saying for, of course, so long from the beginning, I knew it was a lie that there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. It was completely manufactured. But people said to themselves, we so hate President Trump, we so hate the fact that he was elected, we'll make it up and we'll talk ourselves into believing it. But it was an absurdity from the beginning. In fact, Trump has been much harder on Putin, the Russian leader, than Barack Obama was. That's the irony. He has done so much against Russia. He has supplied Ukraine, which is in constant tension with Russia. He has supplied them with much more sophisticated weapons than the Obama administration did. Trump is the one who has bombed Syria, the ally of Russia. He is the one who is threatening Iran, the ally of Russia. Obama was a pal with the Iranian regime. Smuggled, I don't know how, what, $1 billion in cash? What was it? Some ridiculous sum? 100 million? I don't know what it was. But whatever it was ridiculously high. So of course it was phony, but people lied about it and talked themselves into the lie because it's unbelievably easy to talk yourself into something very quickly. Say something enough. If you say, you could say almost anything. You could say the power, this is, I'm a behaviorist. So if you, I know that. You say or do something enough, you will in fact believe it. And it almost doesn't matter what. You could say you move from warm weather to, let's say, Minnesota. I was in Minnesota when it was 15 below this year. So a person could say, and probably should, for their own welfare, I love cold weather. When in fact they miss warm Florida or warm Texas. But if you say enough, oh, cold weather is the best, gradually you'll believe cold weather is the best. You can talk yourself into a lot of things. So that's all a preface to another example of disinformation. The war against cigarettes was an understandable war. Cigarettes kill, according to the American Lung Association, 1/3 of the people who smoke cigarettes for a long time. That's a lot. All right, 2/3 don't. Now, kill can be, of course, it could be killed at 50, it could be killed at 60, it could be killed at 70, it could be killed at 80. They don't tell you, but in other words, you will live less than you would have. 1/3 of the people who smoke cigarettes live a shorter period of time than statistically they would have if they didn't smoke cigarettes. Unfortunately, in the disinformation campaign, cigars and pipes have been, and amazingly, even electronic cigarettes, which have none of the junk that cigarettes have been lumped in tobacco products. But that's ridiculous. Let me explain, because I don't believe in doing things that are just manifestly unhealthy. I wore a seatbelt from the day they installed seatbelts in cars. And I'm a risk taker, but I'm not a stupid risk taker. I smoke cigars because the risk is so minuscule. It's minuscule. Because you don't inhale a cigar, you inhale cigarettes. So they should never lump the two together. This doesn't go into my lungs like a cigarette does. It's done for taste, not for nicotine high. Nicotine has to be inhaled. This is not smoked for nicotine. This is smoked for taste. It has nothing in common with a cigarette except for tobacco and fire. That's all that they have in common. So please, I don't care. I'm not trying to talk anybody into smoking cigars. I'm wanting you to address truth. This is not a fat cigarette. Okay? It's pretty, pretty important. Okay. Got that out of my system. Okay. Now, I usually begin. Well, I did. I began. This was a beginning comments. But today, I'm going to just do the rest of the time some of your questions, because we got a particularly interesting batch of questions from the beginning with Douglas 14 in Texas. What's our youngest questioner yet? Wonder. 14? We have nobody in single digits who's asked me a question? I don't expect them to watch. I'm just curious. Douglas 14 in Texas. By the way, give us your city. Texas is a very big state. So I would be curious. Is it morally correct to hide your guns if the Second Amendment is abolished? It's a very important question. Because you have, either consciously or not, distinguished between moral and legal. This is worth some comments, which is why I'm doing just questions now, because a lot of these things raise great issues. Moral and legal are not the same. It was legal in Nazi Germany to kill Jews, to murder Jews. It wasn't moral. Just to give the most obvious example. I mean, you could give 100 examples. Or how's this? It's illegal to jaywalk. You all know what jaywalk is the term used? Fine. It's illegal to jaywalk. It would be a bit bizarre to say it's immoral to jaywalk. Right? Okay. So there is a very big difference between legal and moral and illegal and immoral. Some things are legal and not moral. Some things are illegal and moral, and so on and so forth. Morality should always trump legality. Morality is ultimate right and wrong. Legal is what's lawful and what's not lawful. Ideally, whatever is, well, almost whatever is immoral should be considered to be illegal. I mean, what could be immoral? Well, there is one area which is very complex, because we use the word immoral. I use the word immoral meaning evil. Whereas a lot of people use immoral for a lot of things, including sexual sins, which may not be evil. So, for example, should prostitution be legal? If prostitution were evil, you can't have an evil legal. But it's a complex arena where two adults, I'm not talking about trafficking, which is evil. That's an evil. But if two adults have a deal, I'll pay you X and I get a sexual favor in return. I have been ambivalent about whether prostitution should be legal my whole life. It's a very complex question. I am now toward the belief that maybe it should be. Because I don't know on what grounds we can make illegal a completely agreed to act between adults in a free society. The only argument I ever had against making it legal was that many young women would probably then enter it. But I'm not sure that that's true. So I sort of persuaded myself out of that. My only point being, there's an example of something. It may well be immoral in some way, obviously, but it is not necessarily evil. And I have a religious basis for saying that. God chose a prostitute to let the Israelites into Canaan. God didn't choose a murderer. God didn't choose a thief. He didn't choose an evil person. Clearly, God would prefer a world where there were no prostitution. That's the implication of the Bible. But it's not an evil. So I'm very clear in my own mind about the issue of evil and legal and illegal and good and so on. Okay. So anyway, back to this. So now your question. The right to bear arms, to my mind, is not just legal, it is moral. To deprive me of the ability to defend myself and my family is not moral. I see this, and so did the founders of the country. They saw it as a moral issue. The ability to protect yourself is a moral issue, not just a legal one. So if the government did something immoral, would I be immoral in not living by that immorality? That's what the question is. I mean, you know, if the government banned homeschooling, which I think a lot of the left would like to ban, in Germany it is largely banned. So don't think that this is a far-fetched idea. They don't like the idea that parents will teach their kids and the schools won't, because they have the left controls the schools and they want to be able to indoctrinate, and they know that 90% of homeschooled families are conservative. I'm just making that up. It may be 100%, it may be 80%. So there are times, look, we have civil disobedience throughout American history where people thought the government sanctioned Jim Crow laws, right? The government said, you can't integrate certain schools. You can't have blacks attend the same school as a white in certain places in the South. We all believe today that when blacks entered those schoolrooms illegally, they were doing something moral. I believe that. I assume you believe that. So that's my answer to your question. The distinction between the legal and the moral. Now, generally speaking, I understand that this could be a slippery slope. If everybody chooses what's moral, then nobody will obey the laws of the land, right? That's a danger. I agree with you. I agree with you. I just said it. Isn't that funny? I agree with me. I don't always agree with me, but in this case, I do agree with me. So that's a danger. You can't always say, I am higher than the law of the land. Otherwise, you would have sort of anarchy. I understand that. But on occasion, you do have to rise above the law of the land when there's truly a major moral issue involved. Okie dokie. Josh 17, today's teenage questioning day. Josh in Portland. Uh-oh. Oh, I need to relight. Not only relight, I need to get rid of my ashes on time. How do you convince someone to not base their actions off their feelings? Whoa, Josh, I'm proud of you. By the way, same with the other guy. These are good questions.
Do you have a lighter?
No, I don't have a lighter here, but I think my man, Rodrigo. And if you get to see Rodrigo in the camera, that is a good thing. Oh, the only one that... Oh, this was okay. This one's fine. So anyway, this is a... How do you convince somebody? Okay. This is out of fuel. It's okay. You know what? I'm out of practice doing this on camera. It's okay. We can live with it. I think. Oh, we're so close. So close, but no cigar. That was funny. That was exactly it. No close, therefore no cigar. That's a pipe lighter, but I'll live with it. Okay. So, it was a good question. This is a very good question. How do you convince someone to not base their actions off their feelings? Let me tell you something. It is very hard. Feelings are the most powerful thing we have. Here is the trick in life. Don't act on your feelings. Act on your mind. Be mind-directed, not feelings-directed. It's true for anything. If you ate everything you felt like eating, you would be obese, or dead, or diabetic, or all three. Right? I mean, I'm giving you as simple example as possible. If men acted on their feelings, there would be a lot of sexual harassment going on. That is natural to men. Oh, a woman is attractive? Let me have her. That's how men, that's male nature. Period. End of issue. Every male you know who's heterosexual, that's his nature. And every male you know who is homosexual, it's his nature too, except it's with regard to men. Okay? It's built in. It is not a result of patriarchy. I want to talk about male sexuality, one of these fireside chats. That's a very important thing. I met a man who's very famous, therefore I won't say his name, brilliant, famous, and said to me that my explanations of male sexuality not only helped his wife, it helped him. So I realized men have to hear this too. It's very, very important stuff. Anyway, life is spent not acting on feelings. That's why I tell people, if you're in a bad mood, don't act out on it. I know you feel bad, but you can't impose that on anybody else. That's not right. Feelings are rarely the guide to doing what's right. Right? Gee, I feel like not having dessert for the next month. Whoever said that? Gee, I feel like visiting sick people in the hospital every day for the next month. Who feels like that? People do good against their feelings. That's how you live life. ironically, you'll feel better if you do. That's the payoff. The payoff is you'll be happier if you're mind-directed than if you're feelings-directed. Feelings-directed not only guarantees bad behavior, it guarantees bad outcome for you. You will be less happy. You will feel less good if you live based on your feelings. These are the arguments that I would give. And a person who finds it hard to believe, tell them you don't act on your feelings. And if you did, they probably wouldn't be all that happy if you did. Right? How often do parents want to wake up in the middle of the night because their kid has diarrhea? Oh, God, I love getting up at 3 o'clock and wiping a tush. I mean, who thinks that way? You know how much we do that are not in consonance with our feelings? Most of the good things we do. That's why it's amazing. I visit a home often and I will see a plaque, follow your heart. I can't think of a worse idea. We have a video at PragerU, by the way. Mike Rowe, I think. Is it Mike Rowe who gives it?
Don't follow your
passions. Exactly. It's such a great, it's a great video. You should watch it twice. You might feel like watching it once, but you should watch it twice. I knew this at such an early age because I was raised in a religious environment. Religious kids, religious Jewish and Christian kids, they're taught they can't live on their feelings from a very early age. That's why they have more wisdom than the average professor who's 45 years old at some university, because they grew up without this wisdom. Take marriage. I'll ask somebody, 28, 30, 35 years of age. You married? No. Why not? I don't feel ready. Just feel ready. Who feels ready? You marry because of two things. You know it's important. It's a better way to live for the vast majority of people. And because you met somebody who you feel you could make a life with. That's why you marry. Because it's a value. Especially for men, but now increasingly for women. Oh, I don't feel like it. Of course not. Men rather, forgive me, screw around than settle down. That's correct. But it's not a good man who does that. Very few people admire a man. Oh, that guy never married. He just went from woman to woman. What a great life. Do we look at Hugh Hefner? I don't know if you know his name. Guy who ran Playboy magazine and, you know, was with, I don't know, 1,000 women. People think, oh, there's a man I admire. Maybe there's a man I envy, but not there's a man I admire. Why, even he got married, ironically. And I think he was faithful when he got married, interestingly enough. Anyway, that's to answer your question. How do you convince someone not to base their actions off their feelings? Give them any example you want. Tell me when you feel like doing the right thing, whether it's avoiding a dessert again, or getting married, or whatever it might be. Or just doing good, giving charity. Who feels like giving charity? You do it because it's the right thing to do. You volunteer your time because it's the right thing to do. Danielle, no age and no location. Surprised Danielle gave the name Danielle. Maybe it's not even Danielle's name. Maybe it should have been no name, no age, no location. Hello. Hello. Can you please explain universal basic income and the impact it could have? I've never heard of it until I heard it will be piloted in Newark, New Jersey. It is? That's weird. Then why won't everybody move to Newark, New Jersey just to get free money? Be the most populous city overnight. I have a hard time trusting information on the internet, but I trust the information Mr. Prager offers. Well, I won't give you different information than you'll get on the internet. I'll just give you maybe a different opinion. The idea of giving people free anything unless they are utterly incapacitated, which is called means testing, and we're all for some means testing. You can't work, you are sick, X, Y, or Z, we understand that's why this charity. I'd rather see charities take care of people than the government, but that's a separate issue. Universal basic income means that the government gives a certain amount of money to everybody, irrespective, no means testing. Whether you need it or not, we give it to you. It is, if you want to corrupt the character of your people, of your society, that's the best way to begin. Give people something for nothing. I can't think of a worse idea. I will go further. All these so-called entitlements or benefits that the government gives, they are addicting people as if they were heroin salesmen. In fact, I do believe, literally I believe this, this is not exaggeration, I believe it is easier to get off heroin addiction or any other drug addiction than it is to get off free things addiction. When you get used to getting something for not working for it, you believe you are entitled. That's why they're called entitlements. I'm entitled. Oh, really? Why are you entitled to some other people's money? Exactly why? You're able-bodied and don't work and you're entitled to money? Why? Work hard. And it makes people miserable. They want it, but it makes them unhappy. Because the all happiness, this is Arthur Brooks' great point, all happiness is earned. There is no such thing as unearned happiness. So if you get stuff you didn't earn, you will not be happy. You will be greedy, you will be addicted, but you will not be happy. It's another way in which the left ruins everything. See my video titled, The Left Ruins Everything. Okay, Joseph 35, Maryland, what's your take on declining marriages? You mean declining rate of marriage, right? I assume that's what he means, yes? Not failing marriages, declining. I basically said it. It's a value. And as we get more secular, it was a religious value. It was the basis, Judeo-Christian. I mean, every religion had it as a value. As we get secular, we get stupid. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Doesn't mean not knowledgeable. It means foolish. So why get married? Hey, why get married? I'll have a significant other or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and or you know just live on my own, and I don't need to build a family. That's a pain. I'll just look to career for happiness and meaning. Good luck with that one, my friends. Good luck. How are we doing on time?
27.
Do I always ask at the right time or what? Here's an interesting one. Jessica in Washington State. If Jesus was Jewish, why don't Christians practice like Jews? So I'm Jewish, so obviously I'm not giving, well, I will give you the Christian answer as I understand it, but please understand it's as I understand it. But I do know Christianity pretty well, and I'm very comfortable in the Christian world as in the Jewish world. I truly am one of the few people equally knowledgeable and comfortable in both worlds. I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you something so you'll know my answer comes from a good place. So the answer, the classical Christian answer is that Jesus's coming fulfilled the law. That is the term Christians would use, that all these many laws given to the Jews in the Old Testament, specifically the first five books called the Torah, they were, as it were, fulfilled in Jesus's life and death and resurrection, and that is not binding on Christians, on followers of Christ. So that's the Christian answer. And I, as a Jew, I will admit I've never fully understood it. And I have talked to Christians. I'm having a big dialogue with a major Christian theologian at the Reagan Library coming up in a few years. It sold out a long time ago. But I hope that, I know they'll be streaming it. So you might want to watch it. We should put the information up at both my DennisPrager.com and PragerU.com. And I'll tell you, why? Jesus, first of all, Jesus said he did not come to change a jot or a tittle. I think that's the common English translation of the law. And he observed the laws. He kept kosher. He kept the Sabbath. So it's a very interesting thing. I have always asked Christians, how do you know which laws of the Bible to keep and which you can drop? So, for example, obviously every Christian believes you keep thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal. That's a given. Love your neighbor as yourself. These are all from the Old Testament, from the Torah. No Christian says, oh, Christ came, I don't have to love my neighbor as myself. It's never occurred, all right? It's not an issue. In fact, Jesus says, love God and love your neighbor, the two great pillars of Christian faith. So, but it's a little complex on other stuff. For example, the Sabbath. I have asked Christians for decades, 30 years, I have asked Christians, I mean clergymen, I mean people serious, knowledgeable about their Christianity, are you bound by the commandment to keep the Sabbath? It's in the Ten Commandments. Guess what the answer has been? 50% have said yes, and 50% have said no. I never know what the Christian I ask will answer. So, but it's a very fair question. Is it really the idea that you take one day each week, not to work, but to celebrate God's creation of the world? To affirm that God created the world and rested on the seventh day, and I rest on the seventh day too? Why is that just Jewish? By the way, there are Jews who think it's just Jewish, so I have no axe to grind here, but it would seem to me that it should be, and by the way, it was universally kept. Christians, whether they felt bound or not, most Christian societies had a Sabbath. They may not have called it the Sabbath, they may have called it a holy day, they may have called it, as in Russian, the Resurrection Day, you know, commemorating the resurrection because it happened on a Sunday. Whatever you call it, but at least it was a day sanctified to God. That's a big deal. It's a big deal for you. It's a big deal for your religiosity. It's a big deal for your family. So it's a very, I don't know the answer, but I do know this. A lot of Christians are adopting Jewish rituals again. A lot of Christians are keeping a Sabbath again, some even on a Saturday. And I'm not talking about Jews who are Christian. I'm talking about Christians who are Christian. And likewise, a lot of Christians have a Passover Seder, and they either go to a Jew's house or they do it on their own in their church. There is a realization, maybe there is some meaning in a lot of these laws. I'm not trying to push any agenda here. I'm trying to answer the question as honestly as I can. One more thing about that. Sometimes it's not obvious that it's ritual. For example, in the Ten Commandments, it says your animals have to rest on every seventh day. Why would a Christian not be bound by that? That's not ritual. That's ethical. Just a question. I think time's up. We have a fun question here. We'll do it next time. Anyway, what can I remind you? I could remind you to watch the PragerU videos and have your kids watch them if you are a parent. If you're a kid, watch those videos. They are life-enhancing. Also, I'd like to remind you that if this stuff interests you, even if you're an atheist, please read my ongoing series on commentary on the first five books of the Bible called The Rational Bible. The second volume will be coming out in a month, and I know it will touch your life deeply. In the meantime, thanks for watching. From my home to yours, God bless you. See you next week.
CCU exists to train leaders. We want to build the church, we want to engage the culture, but we want to help you prepare for your calling. Our adult and graduate studies programs give adult students the opportunity to earn their degree at their own pace, whether you're studying at home, the office, or somewhere in between. The possibilities for online education are now endless. However, many students who enroll in online programs, don't finish. Why is that? Because they don't have the support team to help them get through the program. And that's part of the CCU difference. We do have that team to help you not only orient you to studying online, but also to help you finish the program, get your degree, and achieve your goals.